This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the Out of Time Film Podcast. My name is Tom and as always I'm joined with my co-host John.
Hi.
And this week we are talking about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes, I am such a massive fan of the Matt Reeves films. It was Dawn and then War, and they were phenomenal. They not rebranded, but almost made a new way for Planet of the Apes. It made it so gritty, it made it realistic, and here we have the Holy Trilogy that Tom is holding.
I'm holding it. I'm holding the DVD. Yeah. Utterly fantastic with its own, with a collector's sleeve and all that. I mean, yeah, it truly is one of the best modern trilogies. We've talked about Lord of the Rings on the pod before. I think Toy Story is another one in for the running. I mean, can you really consider that a trilogy anymore? I don't know, but if you want to talk about fantastic trilogies, if you want to talk about some of the best that cinema has to offer, that trilogy is pretty much up there with some of the other greats.
It's solid. It's got everything what you need for such a scale of a movie. You know, you got characters, but you also got this amazing protagonist, which is Caesar, all the way throughout these films. And we follow him on such perilous moments. But now here we are, 5 years later, which is insane to think about. We've seen War of the Planet of the Apes, and there are interesting concepts when it comes to mind. Should we continue a movie franchise? How do we connect or bring new ways in for that? And for me, I'm wary of when it comes to franchises that are continuing on such a concluded place and time.
I agree. I think that in a lot of ways, this is kind of like a legacy sequel. In real lifetime, not really. You know, as you say, 5 years is nothing. We're not returning to this like you return to Star Wars or Indiana Jones or Top Gun or Ghostbusters or Blade Runner or any of the just massive amounts of legacy sequels that we've had. But the thing that this film does that I thought was very interesting is it sets it generations past the end of War for the Planet of the Apes. It's years past Caesar, Maurice, any of those characters, and they are not present here. What is present is the ideology. What is present is the legacy that they have presented. And this film does some really, really interesting stuff with this. And we're not getting into spoilers just yet, but what they do is they play with the idea that over time, history and legacy, it all kind of folds into myth. Different people have different interpretations of it, and we see numerous factions, clans of apes in this film who take Caesar's very simple idea of apes together strong, his belief in humanity and apes being able to work together, and you know, they all interpret it in different ways. I really enjoyed the main character Noah, and he has a very simple arc that I think is shown through three or four scenes where he kind of goes from being a rule follower to somebody who questions the rules, and I thought that was really interesting. This film takes the franchise into so many different directions. Not only is it setting up some really fascinating stuff for the future, but also it's introducing new kinds of characters, new kinds of protagonists. It's not at all like the others. And I think that for what looks like we're building a new trilogy here, I think that this is the right thing to do. I don't think it should be the same as the others. I think we do have to be struggling on. And probably one day we'll get to the point where they adapt the original, where the astronauts from Mars come down. And maybe we'll see that from a completely different perspective. Obviously, you know, the famous twist in the original is that it's not actually a planet, it's our planet, it's Earth, but like, you know, this time we'd be watching that from different, we're gonna get there eventually is my point. But what they're doing here is taking it however many years it's been, maybe like 100 years, you know, maybe a little bit less, a little bit more, and we're kind of building this new thing. It felt very strange to go from War, which is this, it's not a conventional climax, but it is a climax emotionally. It wraps up so many things and it ends on such a definitive note that we're now kind of starting from the beginning in many ways, and I thought that was really interesting to explore.
I agree with that. Noah, he has a strong presence on screen, you know, as a character. I mean, it's a very simple, but I think it's a very effective way to show off a new character for the series. You know, is he going to continue Caesar's legacy? Is he going to explore his leadership for the Eagle Clan? And what's so interesting about that film, as you said, it is a clash of ideologies for the humans, for the apes, and there's different clans of the apes as well. For the past trilogy, it was focusing on the conflict between humans and apes. And then you do get to see some conflict between the apes as well. But this one, it's very layered. It's very deep as well, as we get to explore the new character. It was just kept me intrigued, you know, where it was taking me. But the film just kind of forgotten where it was trying to go with, because it was trying to bring in a new concept, which is like this kingdom. It wasn't forgetting how influential Caesar was. It did feel like a great callback to the originals as well. You see the cinematography and you could not miss any of that, and you go, oh wow, that really reminds me of the original, you know, like with the great landscapes. And he filmed on set, which is incredible as well, and it just makes it feel alive. That was something that I was constantly looking forward into those movies. It's just bringing exciting things as well.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that this film was entirely shot on location is so brilliant. I know that they're actually going to release a version of this film without the apes, so like with all the actors in mocap, but it's exactly the same film, you know, it's using all those same locations. The fact that so much of it does feel tangible, I think that Wes Ball has directed it really well. There are so many sequences that are heart pounding and triumphant, and you know, there's a lot of stuff with water at the end, which I thought was really seamlessly done. Even in the middle, there's a sequence with a bridge and some water, and I think also fire, the way that he depicts elements, impressive. I thought was, yeah, like there's a lot of like elemental stuff going on, and I thought that was really great. Obviously, like, you know, we're not in the human world anymore. We are in the remains of that. Everything is kind of overgrown. And I loved just seeing that. Obviously, not everything is practical. Not everything is live action. There is plenty of CGI, but it's also so seamless. What Andy Serkis and the team behind Rise, Dawn and War have done, you know, they've pioneered all this technology, taking it further from things legendary, like King Kong and from Gollum. I mean, we just got the announcement a couple of days ago that we're getting a Lord of the Rings film about Gollum. And it's like, sure, man, what is this world we're living in? I don't know, but the technology is fantastic, and seeing it go from strength to strength is just so brilliant.
It's so interesting to see that process of technology when it comes to mimicking animals, and it's just very seamless. It never loses touch. The experience of the film, you never lose it, and it's just like you're constantly going somewhere with these characters, and it just makes it real.
Wes Ball is going to be directing the Legend of Zelda film, which could go either way, but I think after this I'm definitely more on board with the fact that it's live action.
I'm such a huge fan of the Zelda series.
Yeah, me too.
I'm so concerned what he's going to do with it, but after seeing this, I'm going to see what he's going to try.
Yeah, gotta let him. I've seen some really great fan casts online for the main roles. Recently, Hunter Schafer as Zelda and Mike Faced as Link. That sounds brilliant. But no, in terms of this film, how do you follow up Matt Reeves? You
can't. That is a great question.
You literally just can't. It's Matt Reeves. He is just incredible. He's proven himself so many different times, so many different ways. And so obviously, this film doesn't come close to that. His story work, his camera work, just all of it is unparalleled. And, you know, the story and the direction in this is still good. It just doesn't come quite close. But it's also important to remember that this isn't supposed to be the second chapter. It's not the climax either. It is kind of, you know, building up all these new elements. And I would say that the film is 2.5 hours, but I thought it was incredibly well paced. I didn't feel it at all. You know, I was sitting there, I never felt like it dragged. I certainly felt like there was a lot going on. As you say, it definitely loses itself. It doesn't quite know. It's introducing all these different elements, and it's like, what are we focusing on here? And that definitely does struggle. Maybe it should have even been longer. Maybe it's one of those times. But I do think that it was engaging. It was interesting. You know, the world was fascinating. The characters, I think the characters got better as well. As we progressed throughout the film, they became more interesting, and, you know, like, it made the ending really work well. I think there's so many things that this film just excels at, and I'm really, really happy about that. It's just a shame that it had to follow up Matt Reeves' work, because it just can't really hold a candle to it.
Those of you who haven't watched Matt Reeves' trilogy, it's incredible. The first one's not directed by Matt Reeves, but once you watch Dawn and then War, it completely switches the tone and just goes, wow. But here, it's a very strange whiplash. It's just like, oh, okay, it's exploring a new world, and we're getting time just to soak it in. You know, we're trying to think about these characters as well, and they are definitely cooking up something for the future films as well, especially for the ending.
Yeah, I feel like that's a good time to, you know, let's go into spoilers. If you haven't seen this film, go out, watch it. I do think it's a really interesting one. I think you will have fun with it. I want to talk about the humans, because in all the Planet of the Apes films, it's all about the dichotomy between humans and apes, and I think it's at its best when that is exactly what it is about. This film, that becomes so evident, because in my opinion, the things that struggle the most are the things where it's just apes with no human contact involved. We get introduced to this human character called May, she is so fascinating because, you know, she doesn't want to give up on this world, and she's kind of pretending to be friends with Noah and is struggling with herself. You can see that there's a conflict within her. There's a moment at the end when she's talking to Noah and he says, can apes and humans live side by side? And she says, I don't know. And then it cuts to just behind her where she's holding a gun behind her back. And you know that she was intending to kill Noah, and that in her mind, it is all about the humans. And at the end, we see the satellites being activated, and I don't quite know where they are in the film, but I think they get contact with Indiana. So like they're contacting different people across the states. You know, humans are trying to kind of build themselves back up. And obviously, as an audience, we're rooting for the apes. I mean, humans have showed themselves to be nothing but the worst, I want to say of humanity, but just of the planet, of the species. Again and again, with Brian Cox in Rise of the Planet of the Apes, or Gary Oldman in Dawn, or Woody Harrelson in War, they have constantly showed themselves to be the aggressors and the oppressors, and not willing. You know, the apes have always just been peaceful. I found it interesting that Noah's Eagle tribe, they are completely defenseless when they get attacked by the other tribe. They don't have any weapons. They didn't even think about that. They just want to have fun with their birds. Whereas humans, we see what's inside their vault, and it's tanks, it's guns, it's weapons, it's all this stuff. And obviously, I know that there have been bad apes, not just bad ape, but like, you know, Cobra and, yeah, you know, there are various gorillas throughout, and, you know, even Proximus in this. Like, you know, yeah, obviously there are bad apes, but I think humans as a species have always proved themselves to be the worst. And as somebody who is so emotionally involved with the apes, like, I thought that ending was devastating. I felt terrible after the film because I was just like, this is horrible. Like, humans coming back can only mean bad things for these wonderful creatures, like, who, you know, are now the dominant. Exactly.
Yeah. And what was so interesting of how the movies makes us connect with the apes on an emotional level, for the ending of War for the Planet of Apes, there's a culmination of elements that come together. Season one, but it just feels so devastating. You know, he lost so many friends in that film. And when it comes to this, it does have that same tone at the beginning when Noah's clan gets attacked by Proximus's clan and they set everything on fire and Noah's father gets killed. It just sets that existential question for the apes as well. It's like, how can they live in a world that is full of conflict with the humans? You know, they forgot about the humans as well. Like, they're called echoes. But then, you know, for the apes, it's an ongoing conflict that keeps this cycle of life and death, really. And for the human side, I just felt uneasy about the ending of, like, okay, where are they going with this? And especially what you said about the original movie, for the plot twist, they came from Mars and they thought it wasn't their planet. I really want to see that to explore somewhere, you know, like, why they're looking up at this telescope. It just made things so intriguing, you know, for the ending, because, you know, for a trilogy, it just builds up so many questions for the characters, you know, where they're going to go for the future and possibly theories. But again, for the human side of the story, May was the center of conflict. Now, she trusted Noah for everything they've been through. And when it comes to that moment in the film, when she doesn't really care about them, honestly, she's kind of selfish. She doesn't care about the apes. She only cares about humanity. That was just devastating. It wasn't a plot twist, but it was just like the shock. It just reflects the humanity across the trilogy. And I thought, again, that is what, you know, Planet of the Apes is trying to tell, is that humans are the monsters in the film.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, a brilliant way of putting it. They really build off those themes of the trilogy so beautifully. There's another human character in it who says to May, there is no going back to what we had, and there's no way for that. And then that's kind of echoed at the end of the film when Noah says to her, can humans and apes? She says, I don't know. And he's like, you know, you want to take this planet? And she's like, well, it was our planet beforehand. And it's like, well, no, whose planet, you know, like, come on, like, you created the virus that just destroyed yourself. You know, like, that's really, I'll tell you what, I just want to say as a side note, I came out of this film and I was like, yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. But even now, just from talking about it, I'm like, wait, is this genius? Like, is this actually amazing? Like, I think there is actually so much to think about.
That's why we have a podcast, Tom. Yes. That's why we talk.
This is why we're doing this. Yes. I mean, it really is compelling in so many different ways. I also loved the way that we see that kind of questioning of reality, the questioning of the law. There's a great scene where Noah and his friends find this book, kind of the ABC book, and there is pictures of a kid going to a zoo, and they see numerous apes behind bars, and they think to themselves, were humans and apes ever really side by side? No. It's constantly questioning this law. One of the first things that Noah says in the film is when they're looking at the basket of eggs, and there's three eggs, and he says, no, we have to leave one egg because that is the law. And that's what he follows. And then later on in the film, there are numerous mentions of this law and about what happens. And his arc really culminates with when the eagle lands on his arm and he says, this law is wrong. He's told about the Church of Caesar, and it's really, really compelling stuff that he's finding out. He's finding out that the elders in his clan, they never told him about all this because they didn't know. They didn't want to know. Nobody knew. And now he's finding out this stuff. And even what, is it Raka, I think, the orangutan? What he tells him, even that is wrong. Apes and humans didn't used to live side by side. Constantly, it's a stripping back of what you think you know. And why are we keeping ourselves to these laws when we really can't? You know, even May thinks that, you know, humans should be dominant again. But really, if she wanted to, she could make a planet where it was humans and apes. But no, she's not interested in that. I thought that's all so interesting. And the problem with all of this is it's all so great and there's all so much going on, but it doesn't really leave much room for the villain. Proximus, yes. The actual like king of this kingdom, you know, the guy who in all the posters, he's in all the marketing, and he's a pretty good presence throughout the film. But I feel like his character kind of just is one note and doesn't really get that chance to be explored properly. And also he's only really in the final half of the film. So yeah. I feel like all these other things work so well, but then he just kind of fell flat for me.
Yeah, I agree. Especially the film was literally talking about a power play that's happening here. You know, you've got May that is trying to get humanity back in its feet, you know, trying to be dominant against the apes. But the apes are trying to learn about themselves, but in different clans as well. And then you got Proximus. When I saw him in the trailers, I thought that's going to be a great villain to see. Because once you look in the villains in the past trilogy, they're pretty good villains. But again, this is power play. They're trying to use Caesar as a figure to look into power. And I think it reflects to humanity. Humanity was looking into power all across history. When it comes to Proximus, he had very little time, and I didn't really understand him as a character. You know, he was just like, oh, what a wonderful day. And, you know, that was it. He was just enjoying his time there. But the problem was, is that you wouldn't get time to understand him, but also, why is he the one that is important, you know, in the film? I wish we get to see longer times that, like, maybe some motivation behind him, like, really strong motivation, emotional connection to understand the villain. Because when it comes to movies and, you know, antagonists, you've got to understand why they're doing this. But if it doesn't work like that, it's just going to be like a villain every week on Sunday and they just get defeated and that's it.
Specifically on a Sunday, yeah. No, I agree. I think that there was more potential for him there. There's something in the film that really could have been gone deeper into. There's a line where Noah's mother says, we belong to Proximus now. And when he kind of rallies his people, he says, oh, it's a wonderful day, you know, apes together strong. Like, he's rallying these people and he's giving them something to believe in. There's a constant idea of faith. What do you put your faith into? You put it into your clan, into a king? Do you put it into a messiah figure like Caesar? Do you put it into, I think humans are putting their faith into technology, you know, and whether it can still work to, you know, to help themselves. Like, you know,
yeah.
Like really interesting stuff. We don't really get into that. There's this kind of ongoing joke in the franchise that none of the names make sense. Like, why is it Rise of the Planet of the Apes and then Dawn of the, like, why do you rise before the dawn and then war? Like, really, should it be Dawn, War, Rise? Like, yeah. There's this joke that none of the names kind of correlate. And obviously, like, that's nitpicking, it's explainable, but this film really is a struggle for the kingdom, you know, who belongs to the kingdom. And that is really, really interesting. I just think that there was just that opportunity that the second half really kind of depends on, and they just don't quite hit it. And I definitely think that a part of me is disappointed because I saw the trailer 1,000 times at the cinema. And so same. I was really like
was
hoping for him.
It was very high.
Yeah, exactly. There were some brilliant moments, you know, like when all of the Eagle Clan sing the song and all the Eagles take out Proximus. That was great. But I didn't feel like, hell yeah, they finally defeated him. That was brilliant. That was a terrible guy. And I just felt like, brilliant. Okay, they're together. I didn't feel that emotion. And I think that, again, coming from Matt Reeves' work in the other films, I was less enthralled, and I don't know what's going to happen next, really. Obviously, you know, they'll eventually get to the original in the timeline, and humans will definitely band together, but I mean, who's going to direct the next one? I mean, Wes Ball seems like he's going to be busy with Zelda. You know, maybe they'll wait a little bit longer, like they did in between these last two. There's a lot of places it could go, but certainly I'm definitely excited to see more, because these are great.
Yeah, I've got a question for you, Tom. Where do you want the direction for the trilogy to go? Like, after the first one, you just watched it. What are your thoughts about, like, where do you want to explore?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, the idea that humans come back together and have a kind of like a one last stand against the apes would be really interesting. We also get the idea of different clans in this. So let's go somewhere else. We've spent so much time in America. Let's go to different biomes. As I said, this film deals with water and, you know, like elemental stuff. War for the Planet of the Apes has a lot of snow in it. Each film kind of is dealing with different stuff. So yeah. Let's go to a different continent altogether. Let's have one set in the desert. Why not? Just like Dune.
Yeah.
Audiences
love
sand.
That'll be a mad collaboration.
Yeah, there's a lot of places to go. I think the franchise has a lot of longevity. They could take this on for years if they wanted to. But I also think that let's finish this trilogy, see where we are. But I want to see the end of the story, then I want to see them. I don't even know if I do want to see them redo the original. You know that original.
I don't want to see that. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, maybe, I feel like maybe, you know, we should just kind of hint towards it and then be done with it. This could be a really interesting story, but it all just depends on where it goes from here, really. You know, whoever picks up the directing mantle. And, you know, like how the story unfolds.
It just can go anywhere. You know, like how franchises can just go to 180. Like Fast and Furious.
Fast and Furious, yep.
They went to space! They went to space!
Maybe that's it. Maybe the apes will go to space. Maybe they'll call it Planets of the Apes. That would be quite interesting, actually. I don't know why I'm entertaining this in my head. I'm like, oh, yeah, actually.
You're just like picturing something, you know, crazy about like apes going to space. Thinking about that.
Okay. Do you have anything else to say?
No. The score. The score is really good. I really like the score in this film.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. John Pisano, who did Daredevil and the Insomniac Spider-Man stuff. Good work. Not quite as good as Michael Giacchino, but I think I did hear Caesar's theme at one point, and I was like, yay, I recognize that maybe. So, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, what are you going to give it out of 10?
I'm going to give it an 8.
Yeah, I think I agree with an 8. I've been struggling because talking about it, I'm like, oh my God, maybe it is much deeper than I thought. And I think it is.
It's a great start.
Yeah.
I think it's
it
a
is a good
start,
isn't it? Yeah.
But it's the weakest out of the 4. You know,
yes, I would agree. I would agree. It shares a kind of similar basis to Rise.
Yeah.
So I think we could only go up from here. I mean, I hope
so.
No,
it's a slow start, you know, exploring something. So,
yeah. When we did our 2024 release radar, I did say this was my most anticipated film of the year. And it wasn't quite as good as I hoped it would be, but it didn't disappoint at the same time.
Yeah, it didn't disappoint. You know, it was a banger.
Apes together strong, my friend.
Ooh, yeah, we were just so excited beforehand, you know, when we got into the cinema, we were just like, ooh, ooh.
I was doing monkey impressions.
Yeah, I was like, steady on.
I came out of the toilet and John was waiting for me, and I was just kind of like, ooh, 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 ooh.
I
love
was
it.
Just like,
it's
yeah,
so
I was
good.
Just standing like, there, I was like, "Hey, you're excited? Let's get to it." Yeah.
I think there's like maybe it's like some sort of primal instinct for me to be an ape. Like, you know, I've evolved into a human, but I really just want to do ape things. I don't know what apes do, but like, I want to be one. Absolutely. Thank you everybody for listening. If you're listening on YouTube and you enjoyed, you can give us a like and subscribe if you want to see more. And if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you can follow and give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy. And next week, we're going to be doing The Fall Guy, which you've seen twice, John. So like, that's going to be interesting to hear your thoughts after seeing it a second time.
I would have to explain why I've seen it twice. So there's a funny story behind it.
You'll have to tune in next time for that.
Yeah.
And you can send us an email at ourstimefilmpod@gmail.com. We'll be recording next Saturday. So let us know your thoughts on The Fall Guy by then, and we'll answer it right here on the podcast next week.
Yes, and you can follow us on Instagram, Out of Time Film Pod, to see our incredible thumbnails from Zane Asville, on Twitter for more thoughts from Tom and me, and TikTok to see edited clips, which are all also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. And you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to L. James Mayer for the excellent theme, and Roland Phillips for the vocals as always. And I think that's everything.
Bada bing.
Take what you're given.
Give nothing back.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.